Dr. Noel Solomons. He's the co-founder and scientific director of the Center for Studies of Sensory Impairment, Aging, and Metabolism in Guatemala. He has worked on the clinical, metabolic, and public health issues of nutrition in relation to health in Guatemala since 1975. He received his undergraduate and medical training at Harvard, and his clinical and specialty training at University of Pennsylvania and the University of Chicago. And he's held many visiting professor appointments in different countries, U.S., Canada, Brazil, Guatemala, Peru, and Indonesia, and has more than 600 publications, including many original papers. Thank you.
Hopefully they're original. And where's the pointer?
This pointer.
And how does it work?
That's it.
And I can't see the board. Okay. Well, thank you. I want to thank the organizers for the invitation. I run into many people here who I met 2 years ago, and they said, well, I saw you last year. And actually, last year I was in Bangkok, Thailand, at the International Congress on Nutrition, which is probably the most important international meeting for interactions about food insecurity. But they thought I was here last year. So I'm trying to give a talk today that is so impactful. I don't have to come back until the year 212, and most of you will think that I was here in next year. Okay, let me go back to the title. By the way, Anne-Marie Hotongwaran is going to be passing out bulletins of my organization. We're completing 25 years this year. And they can start at this end and this end. I want to meet in the middle. We're going to collect them, and the people who ask the best questions can take home an autographed copy. Tragically, after the terrorist attack of September 11, 2001, the discussion, conversation was around only if we connected the dots. And in thinking about the integration of the theme on the slide, I wondered whether it was something that is ordained to be revealed or something that really requires a lot of detective work intensively in different settings, because it's going to be a matter of connecting the dots. And I've concluded strongly with my title that it is a matter of connecting dots. And we're going to do this today in Central America to begin with, and then try and extend it to the world. I show two countries that are important in Central America. No, I can't reach that far. Okay, Guatemala, says Guatemala, and Panama, says Panama. And we're going to be working sort of above the Gua in that area of Guatemala and below the Mala in that part of Guatemala and just below the Pan in Panama. But remember the scheme of Guatemala, because it's going to come up as a Where's Waldo in a future slide. Guatemalan nutritional situation has a combination of all ingredients. Acute undernutrition, which is wasting, that is being too thin, too small for your height. Chronic undernutrition, so-called chronic undernutrition, is stunting, which is being much too short for your age. What Marie Cruel and I were talking about yesterday was global undernutrition, or underweight, which I think is this delusionary measure, because you can actually, if you're very short, be obese and at the same time underweight, and assorted micronutrient deficiencies. So I outlined in my presentation, I'm going to take water in two dimensions. The case history of a acute water shortage that was occurring 1 year ago, and the issue of underutilization of portable water and water in cleansing, hygiene, and sanitation in relationship to the biology of the poor growth that we call stunting. Let's take the first case. It was involved in three levels: acute drought, which led to an acute food shortage, which led to severe malnutrition. And I'm going to give you just a narrative visual of those three aspects of the what was happening last year at this time. In the slide, you see what's called the Oriente, the eastern part of Guatemala. It's comprised of the five provinces of Socapa, El Progreso, Jalapa, Jutiapa, and Chiquimula, shown right on the border, on the borders with Salvador, El Salvador, and Honduras. And I'm going to leave this microphone. I can't stand it. I'm going to jump here. I was told by Victoria not to jump, but I'm going to do it.
provinces of interest outlined in white. The lower colors, the colors you think would be warmer, like your blue, are actually low rainfall. And the colors that are hot are high rainfall. So you see the 7-day precipitation was quite low at this time last year in Guatemala. But in other parts, this is the southwest, it was quite adequate in the upper categories of rainfall. Okay, so now way back. Oh, this is great. Now I can walk around like Oprah. But I can't change the slides.
Oh, okay. Have you been trained in this? Okay.
He's obviously not French because he didn't go on strike. I'm going to ask for something more. Could I have the next slide, please? Okay. And I'm going to do something else that an academic never wants to do, which is give headlines from weblogs. But as you all know, as academics, a year after the event, nothing's in print in a publication yet. So these are some of the headlines I took off some blogs. Christine Smet says, drought aggravates food insecurity in Honduras and Guatemala. This was in August or July of last year. Guatemala is the latest country to declare a food crisis. Nearly 500,000 families face food shortages, by Jeremy Hansay. And Nadja McGill, no relation, said 1 million devastated by deadly drought in Guatemala. Next slide, please. He's pretty good. Now, this is what Guatemala looked like in the Oriente last year. And what's wrong with this picture? At this time of year, the rainy season on the Pacific Plain is from May to October. It should be green and lush. So that's what's wrong. Next slide, please. He's not getting any better. Next slide, please. La próxima, por favor. Okay. 75% of Guatemala is below the poverty line. That's our condition. So we had an El Nino event, the cyclical El Nino, which caused the worst drought in 30 years. 2.5 million people, about 20% of the Guatemalan population, was affected. The next slide. And what basically happened? Now, you got to get this one right, okay? Pay attention. Okay. Because this is the second aspect. The food shortage of the basic staples, rice, maize, and beans. Next slide. And that's what happened with the drought, okay? So basically it was a contraction of the supplies of food in that part of the country without appropriate adjustment. And it caused the second component, acute food shortage. The next slide. By October of last year, a humanitarian survey from the UN had come out and done a quick and dirty survey finding people where they could and classifying them along the lines of severe or moderately undernourished. And it found 11% of children under 5 were severe or moderately malnourished. And interestingly, I like this list, 22% of women between 10 and 19. That's UN political correctness at extreme. Okay, and the girls in the schools were undernourished. More in school children than in under 5s. That's interesting. I won't go into further about that. Next slide, please. And this is a newspaper clip that appeared in the newspaper in Guatemala right about this time last year. And it has some important features for us to look at. Look at this child. He's got a normal-sized head, but not a normal-sized laser beam. Okay, and his arms and legs are extraordinarily thin. And look at the mother. Look at the musculature of her arms. You can see her muscles. This woman carries wood. She carries firewood. She carries water. And look at your own arms, if you're willing to. And you have sort of a lush, sort of fleshy covering, so we can't see your muscles. So this woman has lost, if you will, the fat stores of her arms, but has retained the fiber of her underlying life. So this is a case study from a house in the Corredor Seco during last year. Next slide. These are some of the lessons learned. Obviously, El Nino cannot be reversed. When he comes, and La Niña comes next, and El Niño comes next. But this is a desertifying part of the country, and that could be addressed with proper land management reforestation. Reserves for irrigation could be in place, but the investment has not been seen to be worth the effort. Earlier and more rapid food assistance could have been mobilized. The rest of Guatemala wasn't really hurting. It was just this part, and the food didn't get from that part to this part. And finally, this was embarrassing for the medical profession, which forgotten how to manage severe malnutrition because it had become rather scarce. And this moves us, next slide, onto an article from Tufts University. We can consider that sort of the University of Montreal of Boston. And they looked at women who had been in Cambodia at the time of the killing fields, Pot Pol, and asked them, in retrospect, had they been told they had suffered an acute episode of undernutrition. And they looked at their metabolic profile. And the women who essentially said, yes, I was malnourished once, they told me, have a higher rate of diabetes, metabolic disease. So the long-term consequences of living through these sickle starts is to have metabolic consequences. Living through them, however, is better than the alternative. The next slide. You've seen this slide before. And now we're moving into the next phase, which is chronic undernutrition. And what we saw before were the features of acute malnutrition. But if we look carefully, really carefully, which is why I had to get this microphone and get real close, this is also a malnourishing household. What do we see? We see the child is dirty. His feet are dirty. He's got no diaper on. It's a dirt floor. These you probably didn't see before. These are the father's feet. They're dirty. The little girl, the child, and the mother are also short, as well as being thin. There's virtually no ventilation. There's no light. There's no windows. But if you look closely, there's an electric fan, a ventilator, next to sort of a skylight protected by a net to keep whatever from coming into the household. And they're so unconcerned that they have a skylight in the rainy season. So this is an undernourishing environment for the kind of malnutrition, next slide, which we want to focus on next, which is the chronic malnutrition, being short. Guatemala is a poster child in the world, third in the order, as the most stunted. For under five, as a nation, 49%. There's a laser technology department here. And for the Indian population, the indigenous Mayans, 70% of children under five are stunted. They live primarily in the Oriente, in these dark areas. And these dark areas are the most intense for chronic malnutrition. This was the area of the drought, which except for the department of Jalapa, has a normal height. So we have this polar opposite, acute and chronic. Next slide. Now, what do we know about chronic malnutrition, so-called malnutrition? Well, one of the things I've questioned for years is that only about 40% of the variance in being stunted can be explained by dietary intake and dietary issues. And what Marie Ruel said so beautifully yesterday, this stunting begins at birth. Now, why is that so paradoxical? Because breastfeeding begins at birth. And if we believe, and we should believe, that exclusive breastfeeding is adequate for full growth in healthy children, then why don't they grow well? They've got the access to the perfect food. It's because they are not healthy children. They have perfect diet access and are not healthy. And how are they not healthy? Next slide. Well, these are dirty chickens. And they are somewhat the equivalent of the environment that we saw in that malnourishing house. And what have we known for years? That livestock and poultry in dirty conditions doesn't grow well, doesn't produce a lot of meat. That was known for over a century. And then at the beginning of the antibiotic era, they started putting antibiotics in the feed. And what did they find? These chickens grew as well as chickens grown in a clean environment, just with the antibiotics. And I thought about that, and I said, well, maybe there's something about just the general microbial environment that makes people grow more poorly, like the so-called dirty chicken. The next slide. So I got together with a couple of my friends at Davis. That's sort of the Laval University of California. And one of them, Dr. Kirk Klasing, who's part of the et al., had been working with chickens. He was in the poultry department and had shown that cytokines, inflammatory mediators, were high in the dirty chicken. So essentially, being small was an inflammatory condition in the chicken. So we said if we could get rid of environmental contamination, we might get children to grow the rest of that growth, which can't be explained by inaccess to diet. Now, Jeffrey Cannon, who's anything but a scientist, has had this beautiful taste of journalist who uses a lot of words. I'll try not to use as many as he did. But he isolates on this issue some of the important points, repeated infections and infestation, unsafe water supply, and all of the manifestations of poverty and misery. So I'm going to become a heretic now and say that for stunting, chronic nutrition, water insecurity may be more important and more responsible for a change than food security. And if Arnie's still here, he can get a question and maybe win a bulletin. The next slide. This is Panama. I'm going to move to insights gained in Panama by people at McGill University. It's sort of the Harvard of Montreal. And working in this area, Dr. Kosky, who's still here and mentioned, and Dr. Scott, who left town today because she knew I was going to present her data, have shown some insights which give a mechanistic flavor to what I've been thinking for these 17 years. People are never prophets in their own country, but I'll tell you that McGill people are prophets in Central America with some very important insights, the next slide showing. This was children, very stunted, in an indigenous community in Panama. And here we see the most important, powerful determinants of stunting was age, of course, but also the inflammatory stimulus, the cytokines, inflammatory cytokines, in the child blood, more important than aspirin's eggs, more important than episodes of diarrhea, and these were the other variables that were put into the model and showed no power. Next slide. So they went from Panama to the lake close by, and from Indian children to pup mice. These are pup mice. And in a mouse, because they walk this way, stunting is that way. Okay. So this is the way you measure stunting in a mouse. And what they find is they use this ingenious technique of putting in the stomachs or the intestine of these mice a helminth, I can't pronounce it, Helagomoceroides baki. If I were Baki, I would have given it another first name, which if you take it every 5 days, it causes either high inflammation or, given more less intensively, low inflammation. And if you make these mothers, while they're pregnant, infected with this helminth as an inflammatory infection model, you get a stunted mouse. So instead of being your full length of 2.4 centimeters, they're just a measly 2.2 centimeters on birth. And you can measure them as they supposedly grow through the lactation period, up to 21 days. The next slide shows the hypothesis that your colleagues have gotten, a brilliant hypothesis, one that helps support my idea of the dirty chicken, which is, if this is lengthening, this is the growth of bone, leptin, one hormone, goes to growth hormone, goes to another hormone we used to call somatomedin, which goes into bone development and lengthens the bones. And their hypothesis was that these cytokines and the hormones were interfered with by inflammation and by protein deficiency or the combination, and that could explain this loss of height. Next slide. This is a typical experiment. I won't show all the experiments. This is protein satisfactory, and this is protein deficient. So if protein satisfactory, this white bar, is different from this bar, there's no infection, that means a protein effect is very important. This is an infected animal. Now, if the infection here is much different, up or down, from the uninfected, that's an infected. And if there's an interaction, then with protein and infection together, you get your effect, but not in the other treatments. So with the funding, this major university gets all the money in Canada, they've been able to do this in a whole lot of settings, and I'll just now show the results. Next slide, please. Okay. So you have to trust that they did the right experiments they have. In terms of lowering the hormone levels that cause the bone to lengthen, infection and protein together do it. They reduce leptin, you saw that. Infection by itself and protein by itself reduce somatomedin, IGF, to reduce the length. Now the next slide shows the inflammatory and stress markers. Next slide, please. So this is glucocorticoids, inflammatory, stress markers. And this is an inflammation marker. We already know that infection raises this, but protein also, interestingly. And we know that infection raises corticosteroids. So now blocking the operation of the pathway, which lengthens the bones and makes rats grow, and presumably people too, a beautiful, meticulous articulation of the mechanism that sustains the hypothesis that inflammation is a major explanation of why we don't grow tall. Next slide. And this is the reality outside of a home in Guatemala, not the same home, but a similar home. And what you see here is where the water is, right here in the yard, in the tin, the basin is used to transfer it. And you don't see this animal as well as you do here, but he's the neighbor of the water supply. He's just got his own water supply. So the next line. What did I say? I said water security may be the key. This is one way to begin to get water supply security for drinking water, for preparing foods, for washing dishes. Washing yourself doesn't require clean water, just a lot of water. Washing clothes requires a lot of water, not just clean water and so forth. So I come back to the beginning slide. Thank you, please. He's good. He's learned a lot. Insofar as we need to look at this phenomenon and connect the dots, but not necessarily for Central America, for all parts of the world, and hope we can begin that in the question section. Next slide. Thank you. Thank you.